now. Good morning to some of you who are on the West Coast just waking up, and good evening to all those Asian listeners who are there with us. Millions of people who are listening to our live show. With the second part of the hour, we have Greg Palast right now. The first interview was investigative journalist Whitney Webb, and now we have an amazing investigative journalist, Greg Palast, author of several New York Times bestsellers, including the world-renowned The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and also Armed Madhouse. Last year, actually this year, about a couple of months ago, he won 2018 Mexico's most prestigious international journalistic award, the Pulitzer of Mexico. Greg has done investigative reports for BBC, The Guardian, Democracy Now!, Rolling Stone, and also his film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, The Case of the Stolen Election, is available on Amazon and Prime or at GregPalast.com. Greg, thanks so much for your time and for being with us.
Dale, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. You just got married, so I, you know, congratulate you on that. It's wonderful to hear. Happy newly married
man. Check with me in a year.
So, yes. let's get right into this. You know, we have a lot of stuff to discuss. My first question really is, you know, I mean, we can talk about so many different things. Is, you know, one of your key areas is election fraud. Yes. You know, you've been doing this, I don't know, 20 years at least since I've been following you.
Yes.
Now, the first time I heard of you was in the 2000 George Bush, you know, election fraud. That's 19 years ago. So my question is, how is what's happening right now or in the last elections is different from George Bush's shenanigans back in the year 2000 and the year 2004, or are they different or are they not?
There's not a big, you know what, I got to tell you, everyone, there's a hysteria that right now is different. It's 1933. It's the worst. You know, it's like the sky is falling. All these henny penny people running around. There's nothing new under the sun, Daniel. So back in 2000, to bring people up to speed, because if you don't know Greg Palast, in 2000, I was working with The Guardian and BBC, and I discovered that that a woman, Catherine Harris, who was then Secretary of State of Florida, and the governor was Jeb Bush, George Bush's brother. George Bush is running for president, and they removed over 58,000 black men from the voter rolls just before the vote on the grounds that they were felons. Now, until recently, if you were a felon in Florida, had a conviction for a felony, you couldn't vote. That's, by the way, not a small amount. That's over 1.5 million people. You can't vote. What they did was they targeted people who were not felons, said they weren't allowed to vote. For example, a guy that I put on camera named Willie Steen. He was a Gulf War veteran. He took his kid to go, a 5-year-old son, a young black man, took his 5-year-old son to go vote with him to see the wonders of American democracy. He's told, you can't vote. You're a felon. Well, he'd never gotten even a parking ticket. And later, by the way, after the election, so George Bush, after removing 58,000 black people, and by the way, obviously they weren't voting for Bush, George Bush won the presidency by just 537 votes. That's it. Just 500 votes made him president. That gave him the state of Florida and the presidency. And that was all because they removed these black men from the voter rolls. Now, that's 2000. Has anything changed? Yeah, the games have become wider and more sophisticated. So, for example, there's a guy, Chris Kobach of Kansas. If you want to remember that name, just think KKK, Chris Kobach of Kansas. And he created and promoted a program called Interstate Crosscheck. And he said that there were people, and you've heard this from Donald Trump, both in his campaign as president, that there are people all over, millions of people, according to Trump, voting twice illegally in the elections. This great hysteria. So that there are people voting twice. Really, you know, if you vote twice, you go to prison for 5 years if you get caught. That's a heavy price to pay to get a single vote going. So he created a list of suspects. He matched names in two states to see who voted. And believe it or not, he came up with a list of 3.6 million voters who had voted twice. 3.6 million felons in the United States voting two times, committing this crime. Well, who I finally got these names. If you know Greg Pallas, I'm an investigative reporter of the old style. I actually got the list of his suspects, and they are people, for example, with names like Jesse Jackson and John Black, and they had different middle initials. So, for example, these are real examples. James Edward Brown voted in Alabama, and James Thomas Brown voted in Virginia. And they said, that's the same guy, James Brown. So there were 535 guys in Georgia called James Brown, who they said voted twice because they found James Browns with different initials, or junior and senior didn't match in other states. And they removed these from the voter rolls. If it weren't for that, Donald Trump would not be president. It was a mass removal. And in the past, and now what are we facing in 2002? The Elections Assistance Commission has just released some data. 14 million people have been removed from the voter rolls in the last 2 years. 14 million. Now, I got to say, people die. People really do move. People, there's real good, people do go to jail and they lose their right to vote while they're in prison in most states. But that accounts for a few million. There's probably half that list of people who should never be removed from the voter rolls and will show up in 2020 to vote, and they are shafted. Now, so it's more sophisticated. They use more sophisticated means, but it's the same stuff from 2020. It's just a new kind of, kind of electronically and computer-driven Jim Crow operation.
Greg, you know, my question is, like, you're talking about all the stuff that's happening right now. But, you know, so my question is, are the Republicans the only ones who steal elections, or do Democrats also steal, but not as ably as the Republicans? Because, again, we remember what happened to Bernie Sanders back in the 2016, and all the shenanigans of the Hillary Clinton Democratic National campaign against Sanders winning the and I think
that's
he would
correct.
Have won
so,
the candidacy.
Yes. Shenanigans are not, the Republicans don't have a monopoly on this. And I think when you said, are they more able than the Democrats? Their methods are far more sophisticated. But here's the interesting thing. When Republicans go after voters and remove them wrongly, they say, for example, in Georgia, I found literally through, I filed suits that said 300, and I found out that 340,000, let me repeat that, 340,134 voters were wrongly removed from the voter rolls. I have each of their names and addresses, and there's a lawsuit now over this, but, you know, the election's over. But Democrats go after the same people. You're saying, what? Democrats go after Democrats. The Democrats tend to go after the people, the establishment Democratic Party goes after voters in primaries to make sure that they target black folks, they target Hispanics, they target young people especially. And people say, well, why would the Democrats remove Democrats? Because if you don't remove dissident Democrats, you're going to have a very different Democratic Party. In the case of Bernie Sanders, for example, and this is a very important point that you brought up, as we speak today, there are 750,000 ballots that have still not been counted that were disqualified from 2016. So we have 750,000 ballots disqualified in California from the primary between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Now, supposedly Hillary Clinton won by 200,000 votes, but almost all those ballots which were discounted and disqualified, almost all of those ballots were from what are called no party preference voters in California, what we commonly call independent voters, who are allowed to vote in the Democratic primary. But it's a very complex process, and on technical grounds, They simply didn't count those votes. And now we know from the Roper poll that if you're an independent voter in California and voted Democratic, you're more likely to vote for Bernie by 3-1 compared to Hillary. So if you do the arithmetic, if you say three-quarters of those disqualified votes were votes for Bernie Sanders. Sanders won California, and not by a small margin. And by the way, I was viciously attacked by the Washington Post, saying Greg Palast, respected investigative reporter. I'm going to quote that forever, the respected investigative reporter, according to the Washington Post. But the respected investigative reporter, Greg Palast, lent his name to conspiracy theories that Bernie Sanders won the California primary. And I called up this kid reporter, this punk, who never even called me before he wrote this article to say, well, why, where did you get your, what's up, where did you get your numbers from? Instead, he just wrote this attack. And I said, one, why don't you try to get the information before you wrote the story? But I said, two, when is arithmetic a conspiracy theory? It's pure arithmetic. Bernie Sanders won. The Democratic establishment stole his votes through comp. The way they did it simply, you have to go through a whole crazy procedure if you're independent to vote in the Democratic primary in California. And people had to ask for a Democratic crossover ballot. And a lot of people said, just give me a Democratic ballot. Those ballots were thrown in the garbage because it has to say crossover on top. It's like, this is very much like the old South. Remember, when people say, well, black people were not allowed to vote in the South before the Voting Rights Act of 65 and before Martin Luther King, is Selma March and the Voting Rights Act. That's not exactly true. The South never said black people, there are no laws on the books in the South that ever said black people can't vote, not since the Civil War. It does say, oh, you have to pass a literacy test, or you have to pay a poll tax, or you have to have someone vouch for your moral standing in the community. All kinds of gimmicks that never said black people can't vote, but had a practical effect of stopping people from voting. The Democrats have done that too. Whether I've seen it in Chicago, I've seen it in California, I saw it in Brooklyn, New York. I've seen it. In fact, I hate to say it. California holds the record for the disqualification improper disqualification of votes. They are worse than Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi combined.
Let me ask you another question. I mean, it's obvious from what you're saying, from the things I read. Again, I'm not in the United States. I'm in Canada. But reading and seeing all this
Howard.
Stuff, and needless to say, I've been reading you for many, many years. The voting system is broken. It's broken beyond repair, I think. So my question is, can it be fixed? Can anything be done to make it workable?
Yeah, I don't think it's beyond repair. Look, it's an endless war, because I'm going to tell you why. The war over voting has continued Julius Caesar and buying votes in Rome, okay? This is
true
stuff, okay? All right? The United States and George Bush did not invent vote thievery, okay? Let's get this straight. This is as old as... And why is that? Because vote thievery is class war by another means. It's real simple. And here we get back to the math. The 1% are in control. They're not going to give up that control, but they've got a problem. Where you have a democracy, the 99% get the vote, and they got more votes than the 1%. It's real simple.
You know, the funny thing about that
is the 1% is going to have to come up with ways to disqualify. They have to fool some of the people most of the time, and they have to steal the votes of the rest of the people some of the time, and you add those two things up, and that gives them the control of government. But you have an endless war, an endless battle to get the vote to those who don't have it. And, it started out right after the American Revolution, when you had people pick up the gun against the original U.S. government to demand that people without land get the right to vote. We start out with people not allowed to vote if they had no property. So literally, only property people, which were the minority, got to vote. And, of course, only propertied white men, for the most part. And originally, by the way, the very first battles over voting rights occurred where Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, and Tom Paine, particularly George Washington, who fought against rules which prevented Catholics and Jews from voting. So originally it was a fight over the right for Jews and Catholics to vote back in the early revolutionary period. That's where we get the Second Amendment that says that you can't, of the Constitution of the U.S., says you can't establish a religion, because that grew out of the requirement that when you went to vote, you gave an oath that you were ruled only by Jesus and no foreign power, meaning the Pope. You couldn't be ruled by the Pope. So this goes way, way back, way, way back. And so George Bush invented nothing. The Republicans are not the exclusive Lex Luthor dark powers of vote theft. But they're really, really good at it.
Greg, another question. You know, what would happen if you know, like, for example, in Argentina and in Switzerland, you have no choice, you have to vote. And if you don't, you have to have a very, very good reason why you're not voting. And what would happen if in the United States they suddenly made, because again, it's like, what's the abstention percentage in the United States? 60%, 55 or 70? Yeah. I don't know. Some ludicrous numbers of people who are not voting at all. Whether they don't believe in the system, they don't have a party to vote for, they don't like any of the candidates, whatever the reason is. What would happen if suddenly they changed the rules and the laws of the United States and said, hey, as of next elections, everybody has to vote, or you have to pay, I don't know, $10,000. What would happen? How would that work?
Well, you'd have a very different government. We do see very different governments when everyone, not only, see, it's more than that you get punished. I just came back from Switzerland. That's, I married a Swiss. It's fascinating. You have a very different government when everyone gets to vote. They have a form of basic, it's a kind of what I call, what probably Marx would call primitive socialism, kind of the kind of socialism preached by the disciples of Jesus. And why is that? Because everyone votes, and so they better take care of all their voters. You can't have a whole big underclass. You basically in Switzerland have effective full employment at high wages, and that's not by accident. It's not just that they stole that they are keeping out other people's money, funded by dictators' money and money stolen from Africa and
well,
Latin
they do
America.
That too.
They do that too. There's no question. I'm not going to let's not sugarcoat this thing.
I worked in
Latin America.
And that they do
right,
that too. And that's not
out
of the
story. I'm allowed to go sideways with you because it's fun. I did a story where my wife followed the dictator of Zambia. I should say the autocrat of Zambia, who went on a shopping spree in Geneva. And spent $1 million in a single afternoon at this one shop to buy 200 suits and a tie which was covered with diamonds, $125,000 for a tie covered with diamonds, 100 pairs of elevator shoes because he was short, and my Swiss partner, now my wife, she went in to pretend that she was part of a reality TV show called Shopping with the Rich and Famous, and got the store in Geneva to talk about all the things that this dictator just bought, and showed us the diamond studded tie and the shoes and the silk shirts. And this is in Zambia, where one of those shirts could feed a village for a year. And so, yes, that supports Switzerland, but the Swiss themselves don't get ripped off because they all get to vote. They all are required to vote. And remember, if you require people to vote, you don't spend your time figuring out ways for them not to vote. Universal.
You know, going back to Switzerland, you have Switzerland where things work. You know, trains run on time, mm-hmm. post office always works, yeah. Everything is clean. It's a pristine country. So many different ways. Yep. As long as you just, you know, it's picture perfect. As long as you don't look under the carpet. But then you have the other extreme. You have Argentina, where voting is also obligatory. Okay, but things don't work. They're about to default again. I think for the 19th time in the last 150 years or 75 years.
Well, you remember. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So why does it work in Switzerland,
Argentina,
and why isn't it working in Argentina, which is not, you know, it's a quintessential. I mean, Argentina, yes, it's a Latin American nation, but it's a European Latin American nation where everybody is from Europe. They're pro-British, you know, they love their scones and the afternoon biscuits and the afternoon tea and, you know, and then their polo and, you know, it's just an extension of the British Empire. So why doesn't it work there?
It does and it doesn't. There's a real mix in Argentina, and I'll tell you why. There's more than just walking in and marking a ballot that makes democracy. First, there is the money, okay? And in the case of Argentina, for example, there's an American billionaire, Paul Singer, who single-handedly bankrupted that nation. And when he, Paul Singer is a guy that I've been trailing, and you'll see in my book, Vulture's Picnic, I do a lot of that work, and in my last film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, free on Prime, that's my last ad. Paul Singer bought up Argentina's debt when it was on the ropes and under military rule. Remember, it didn't always have democracy. It was under military rule fairly recently, they had invaded, and they got in a war with Britain, so much for love of Britain for a while. They got in a war with Britain, and they were bankrupt. And they were bankrupted in part because they adopted the rules of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank for austerity, a failed concept that if you when we had a depression in the United States under FDR, we got out of it because he said we have to go into deficit spending. The IMF and World Bank say under the austerity theory that if you're in trouble financially, you stop spending and try to balance your budget. But of course, you stop spending, there's no taxes, and you get a bigger deficit, and you just spiral downward. That caused them to default on their debt. And
Greg, hold that thought. We're going on to a 4-minute break. We'll be back in about 4 minutes with Greg Palast.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong. Now, you can give your body and your immune system a mega boost of disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. With so many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all-natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rents.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rents.com.
With dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food storage I love to eat. Yum!
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio Superfood. I've taken Bio Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
Hi, it's Catherine from the Power Hour. If you are one of the many millions of people who have difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, or having unrestful sleep throughout the night, REM sleep could be the solution you've been searching for. If you are like me and are afraid of the dangerous side effects from prescription sleep aids, REM sleep is an all-natural alternative that contains ingredients research has shown to help improve and enhance better sleep. REM sleep will get you the deep sleep you need to feel your best and will ensure you wake up feeling energized. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today.
Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? Thepowermall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829 or order online at thepowermall.com today.
We're back, the Power Hour with your host Daniel Eschel, and we have an amazing investigative journalist, Greg Palast, and we were talking in the first half an hour about the vote rigging, the systems that could possibly replace what happened with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton in the Democratic race back in 2016. And, you know, before we actually go to guns in America, I wanted to ask you about Donald Trump. In the end, it doesn't really matter if you're for or against, because people say, so are you for? And I say to them, you know, I can't be for, I'm Russian. You know, I look at Trump as a paleontologist would look at a dinosaur. But, you know, my question to you, you are American, and it doesn't matter whether you're living in Switzerland, in London, or in the United States. You know, how would America have changed had Clinton won the elections back in 2016?
Not a lot. And, you know, people think that this is like, you know, it's not as big a deal. Let's put it this way. The Twittiest-in-Chief, Mr. Trump, okay, so every time he moves his thumbs on his phone, you know, we all go crazy. But there isn't as much change in power as you might think. Okay, there was a never Trump crowd in the Republican Party, like the Brothers Koch, and David just passed away this week. The Brothers Koch despised Trump. Paul Singer, the Vulture, the guy that I told you just bankrupted Argentina, had stolen billions from that nation. He was never Trump. And now they're all thrilled with him, because what they were worried about is that Trump would actually go through with his promises in his campaign to confront Wall Street and confront Goldman Sachs and confront and take away the special tax privileges. There's a gimmick called carried interest, which is $70 billion in tax breaks that goes almost entirely to a few billionaires. These billionaires, like Paul the Vulture Singer, were worried that Trump would change things. Well, he didn't. He protected that carried interest loophole. He protected the Kochs and their operation. He not only protected Goldman Sachs, he stuffed his cabinet with more Goldman Sachs people, the same people that Hillary Clinton put in and would put in. So while there's a difference in feeling, there's this kind of nastiness about race and immigration and this, you know, Trump's moral leadership of the United States is failed. You know, that's a very polite way of saying he's kind of patting racists on the head, and he's creating this craziness about the, you know, people coming over the border to rape you and murder you. But the truth is, not much has changed. Not much would have been different.
The words one thinks of when think of Donald Trump. But then, you know, moral fortitude is not exactly what I would think of when I see Hillary Clinton or any of these other characters out there. Let's talk about guns in America. Again, coming from a different country, I see things, you know, from a slightly different perception or perspective. But, you know, again, the common theory is, and you see this in ads all over America, you see this on, you know, the radio shows and TV shows, you know, everybody's saying is, especially those who are, you know, pro-NRA and pro-guns, if there's no need for assault rifles, why do all of the police have them, for example? And we, the people, encounter the same threats police do, and almost always before the police arrive, and if we don't have the guns, they're going to come. You know what I mean? So how do you see this debate playing itself out between now and 2020 elections? And then do you think it's going to play a big role in the elections itself? Because, again, what we're seeing globally is the fact that the economic model, Bretton Woods, is on the verge of collapse, which means we're going to have a lot of changes in America and everywhere else. The logic of it is, if you want to make sure that, you know, your family is protected, make sure you have guns, because, you know, if you have to rely on the government, they're not there to help you, they're there to kill you. So how much of that is mythology, and how much of it is true?
Well, I think that both sides are completely off the wall and off the subject. If the issue is to protect your nation and protect yourself, it's not about passing a law against guns. I don't like guns. And you know what? You know, we just had these mass murders, and this hit very close to home. When I was in Switzerland getting married, my ring bearer is the great hip-hop artist Jevon Lamar out of Dayton. And 2 days after the wedding, we're still celebrating, a little hungover. We're celebrating, and we get text messages that two of his cousins were gunned down, murdered in the Dayton massacre. Two of his cousins. Now, so this is really close. And by the way, go to gregpals.com, because in the next week or so, we're going to be releasing a new hip-hop track by Jevon, because what he does, he's an artist, is do something about that, and we'll have a song about Dayton killing and his cousins, and to raise some money for their families. He had a couple kids. Now, this is terrible. So what do people want to do? They say, we got to do something. Well, let's ban guns. Let's ban assault rifles. Let's ban this type of, or have all kinds of background checks and lists of people with guns and da-da-da-da-da. Well, you know what? Believe it or not, we already have a law that says it's illegal to murder people. And that doesn't seem to help, including the fact that we have laws, and in most states, they hang you, they kill you, or they shoot you, or they poison you to death if you commit that crime. That doesn't seem to stop people, but they think if we have another law that says, oh, you can't have this gun or get this gun, someone will say, oh, my God, I'm not going to kill all these people. I could lose my gun license. Okay, it's not – laws don't – prohibitions don't work very well. It's just a matter of we want to do something, okay? And I understand that feeling. I wanted to do something when I heard that TJ, Jevon's cousin, was gunned down in Dayton. But if we pass a law – okay, we had laws against marijuana. All that resulted in is black men going to jail. We had the, and I would like to, every, suddenly Kamala Harris attacked Joe Biden over supporting the law 94, the crime bill, which put literally, that crime bill ended up with millions of black men in jail. Okay, so she attacked Biden. You put millions of black men in jail for no real good reason. It didn't make America safer. Well, I want to remind Kamala that the entire Congressional Black Caucus voted for that bill because they thought this would make their community safer. So everyone who says, let's have a ban on assault weapons, I'm going to tell you this right now. Who's going to go to prison? The 50-year-old guy in Idaho who has an assault rifle in his basement? Or you're going to get a bunch of kids, black kids in Dayton, Ohio, who are going to go to prison for assault weapons possession. We have, for every crime committed, every study shows that that black people are 600% more likely to go to prison than white people for any crime, even if the number of crimes committed by both races is the same. We see this, and you know, and so what we're going to do is we're going to have a new law which is going to put a lot of black kids in prison. I just want to remind you that the shooter in Dayton was given the weapons by his best friend, a black man. Okay, who's going to go to prison? So you're going to fill up the prisons with more black men. That's not going to make us safer from crazy white supremacists. And I think you got to the core of the issue. So why do people do these things? Every one of these crimes, almost every one, has been committed by a young male who has no job or no real job, no future. You had this 24-year-old kid in Dayton was working at a Chipotle. And if you've been to Dayton, that city was destroyed. Remember I mentioned the vulture who bankrupted Argentina? He bankrupted Dayton, too.
Singer, yep.
It lost 40% of its population. You have people with nothing to lose. So they get, and a few of them get hepped up on racism, or they get hepped up on some other issue where they feel wronged by the planet. One of my close friends that I grew up with in the poor end of Los Angeles is the Vegas shooter. He killed 52 people. Steve Paddock. I went to school with him. I know why he killed 52 people, because he was a kid with a super brain who came from a very poor area, which is where I grew up. I found my way out, but he couldn't figure his way out, and so he was angry that his life went nowhere. We were talking about Switzerland. You don't have mass murders in Switzerland because at the age of 24, people's lives aren't going nowhere. They all have jobs. They all have professions that they get to choose. It's economic. I'm sorry. This is class war gone wrong. It's not about guns. It's about kids whose lives were destroyed and have nothing to lose, so they're going to take you with them. It's a form of suicide where they take people with them, and it's economics. It's not the type of weaponry you have in your hand.
Greg, Catherine Austin Fitz, former undersecretary for housing in the first Bush government, she wrote in one of her reports, one of the last conditions of sovereignty is the Westphalian sovereignty, going back to 1648. With very little fanfare over the last three decades, the United States of America has made a significant investments through its intelligence and also defense budgets in building private mercenary armies. Those private armies have been lobbying aggressively to be allowed to replace the United States Army in the Middle East and also in hotspots around the globe. And private armies are now a financial constituency that lobbies for profitable opportunities to use force that generate U.S. corporate and bank profits and capital gains and the resulting campaign contributions. So if you look at the covert operations happening around the United States, including shootings, assassinations, false flag events, and likely weather warfare, it's clear that the United States military and federal enforcement in state and local government, though subdivisions no longer maintain a monopoly on the use of force within the United States border. So, I mean, all that stuff, and now, especially with the FASAP 56, and we're getting to the point where, economically speaking, we're looking at, you know, staring at a collapse, global collapse. So how much is this global collapse is playing and exacerbating all those things that we're talking about right now, you know, especially chaos, you know, mass shootings around America, which I'm not sure if they're mass shootings, more of mass shootings today than they were years ago, or just we're getting more media coverage of it. But, you know, how is all of that playing into this, you know, what I'm talking about?
Well, we do have a problem of an economic of when we say economic collapse, it's not collapsing for everyone. David Koch died with $42 billion still in his pocket. And so you can't say it's an economic collapse for the Koch brothers. It's not an economic collapse for the Clintons, who were worth nearly $1 billion, or Al Gore. It's not an economic collapse for the ruling class. Whereas the worldwide depression of the 30s affected everyone, including the ruling class. They were in danger of losing their fortunes. This isn't happening now. So we've basically thrown people on the pile of on a kind of economic doomed pile. And they're going to react, and some of them are going to react intelligently by trying to vote for better government. And some are going to react by losing their minds and taking out a gun. And so I think that we have to look at the economics which are forcing these dangerous situations. For example, you've got the, and this I want to go like as a good seg over to immigration. Okay, in the United States, we really do have a crisis. There are 250,000 people coming to the border, the southern border, every month. 250,000. Now, we haven't had anything like that in decades. Now, you know, you got, and again, the discussion is really weirdly off base. On one hand, you have Donald Trump saying they're coming to get us, and, you know, they're going to kill us and rape us and take away our jobs and all these things. And then on the other hand, and so don't let them out. The other is the Democrats who all raise their hand to say we shouldn't remove anyone whose only crime is crossing the border. In effect, that means opening the border. Why is this happening? We have the 250,000 people are coming almost entirely from Central America, from Honduras, Guatemala, and Salvador. These are failed states, especially Honduras. It's a failed state where people are being gunned down, murdered. It's in control of gangs. And I want to remind you, how did we end up with a failed state in Honduras? Our Secretary of State years ago, Hillary Clinton, and our President, Barack Obama, helped overthrow the elected government of Honduras. Instead of getting a government that they thought would be friendly to the United States, what they got was a government that simply dissolved and was taken over by drug lords and kidnapping rings and the rest. So we overthrew a functioning government, and we ended up with a disaster. Now people are heading north because they can't stay there. They're willing to risk going to prison and being separated from their kids. So now there's two answers going on here. You can either say open the borders, which is what most Democrats are saying. So in other words, you have the house, Honduras is on fire. Trump says close the doors and don't let people out of the house that's burning. The Democrats say, oh, they can all come over and live in our house. No one's saying, why don't we put out the fire? If Honduras is on fire, put it out. Let's rebuild Honduras so people want to go back. My friend Ramon from Honduras, he cries every time I see him. He's in tears, literally in tears because he can't go home to Honduras because he says, I'll be dead within a week. They'll kill me. And so why don't we put out the fire in Honduras? So the whole discussion about immigration is completely off the wall. We're not talking about the causes of immigration. Most people don't want to leave their home. You're an immigrant. You know how difficult it is. It's not something you easily or voluntarily do if you can stay safely where you live. And in fact, by the way, Daniel, here's the most interesting fact that no one's talking about. 2 million undocumented Mexicans in the last decade have left the United States for Mexico. 2 million have gone back to Mexico because the Mexican economy has improved and job opportunities have improved, and a school teacher from Monterrey would rather go back to Monterrey and teach school than stay washing dishes in Los Angeles. 2 million Mexicans have returned, and that wasn't because of threats. It wasn't because of ICE. It was because there are opportunities to return to Mexico. If we do that to Honduras, you don't have to worry about people coming up to the border starving with their kids. And so we have it all wrong.
Staying on the subject of immigration, Greg, I mean, one of the things about media today is what's happening somewhere in any point on the planet, be it the United States or Australia, is something, you know, we immediately see it's visible globally because we have access to, you know, 24/7 media, be it social media or mainstream media or internet media. So again, so what we're seeing in the United States, all these masses of humanity pouring into, you know, Mexico from Guatemala, from you know, Colombia via Panama, etc., is what we're also seeing in Europe, but we're seeing in other parts of the world. So how is that different, or is it different? You know, the millions coming into Europe, you know, from northern Africa, from the Middle East, and what we're seeing, you know, the masses that are pouring into the United States, or the border, at least, Mexican-American border.
Well, we have two types of immigrants pouring into Europe. One is internal within the European Union, and this is what is one of the things that was driving some people on Brexit. And there you have high skill and medium skill labor, high skill labor moving from Poland and Bulgaria and Eastern Europe and into Britain and other nations. The problem there, whereas low skill labor for the most part has come up from Mexico to the United States, and so there's room and place for them. We don't have much immigration in the U.S. It's kind of blown up. It's really actually a small number. But in Europe, it's big. And they are replacing workers who really do have a complaint that has to be dealt with. Whether it means closing the border, I don't know. That's probably too late to do that anyway. But that's a different issue. But the elites are not dealing with it. And here's a very interesting statistic. I was a Guardian columnist, okay, for the Guardian newspaper, our great left-wing paper. And I'm probably, you place me on the scale, I'm on the left progressive end. But I have to say to my fellow Guardian writers, not one Guardian writer is going to be replaced by someone from Bulgaria because they will write the column cheaper. But you do have union and skilled workers losing their jobs, and the elites are not caring. The elites are happy to get cheaper plumbers. The elites are happy to get cheaper car repair by emptying out Bulgaria and having it come to England. Now, the better thing is to build the economies, not wreck the economies of places like Bulgaria and Lithuania and Poland, which were destroyed by membership in the euro. The euro has completely destroyed almost every nation of the European Union except Germany and the Netherlands. It's a destructive, corrosive force. You have massive unemployment, especially 30% youth unemployment in Spain, 30% youth unemployment in Italy, laid at the feet of the euro. Now, so that's one of the things that has to be dealt with. So they say everyone who's complaining about immigration in Britain, calling for Brexit, is a racist. No, they have a legitimate concern about their jobs. It should be dealt with. It should be dealt with. The second is that there's no housing because of this mass flood. And at the same time, there's a massive brain drain on these nations of Eastern Europe. How about developing their economy and not keeping them under, the euro is basically the Deutschmark dressed up as the euro. And they are under the control of German banking domination, and that's the big problem in Europe causing that internal problem and the push for Brexit. But when you talk about, again, Africa, you have massive influx from Africa, massive influx from Syria, of course. There was massive influx from Kosovo during the Balkan conflict into Switzerland. You were just mentioning that, and throughout Europe. Well, how about we end the conflicts? How about we get our foot off of Africa and stop sucking out its resources for nothing? Maybe people wouldn't have to flee to Europe so they wouldn't starve. Again, most people, and you know this, don't want to leave their homes. They don't want to make this dangerous journey.
Absolutely. We only have a couple of minutes left. Just to summarize what we're talking about. You know, in the first part, we discussed the first half of the show. We talked about the United States elections, the system itself, how it's not really working very well. It can be done. And then we discussed immigration, the guns in America. And just to end this, what we're talking about, the immigration, England is in the throes of this Brexit debate. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether Johnson can pull England out, whether it's good for England or no. I have a different take from what most people when they look at Brexit, because again, I look at things conceptually. But my question is, what do you see happening with Brexit in October?
Oh, there's too much hysteria. Okay, I was listening to MSNBC, which I tend to call MSDNC, and one of their commentators is saying, literally, there's going to be people are hoarding food. They're hoarding Nutella. They're afraid they won't get their Nutella for breakfast from France. They're hoarding antibiotics. They're hoarding. There's going to be an energy shortage. That's pretty funny because Britain's an energy exporter. There's going to be all these shortages as if leaving the European Union, which is simply a trade agreement, okay, leaving the European Union is going to cause an embargo, and there'll be battleships in the English Channel preventing the French from bringing Nutella to their British customers. that somehow they won't get antibiotics. By the way, the antibiotics are made by the U.S., Britain, and Switzerland. You know, so this hysteria that there'll be shortages, that there'll be riots in the streets, literally, that there'll be, you know, that there won't be gasoline. Now, some of that, by the way, for 1 week, there will be shortages because there'll be all this panic buying and craziness. Then when people realize, oh, the Germans and the French and the Italians are still going to want to sell us stuff, right? In fact, the German economy would collapse within 3 hours. 3 hours if Boris Johnson said, we're not going to buy anything from Germany. You don't give us a deal. We're not buying anything from Germany. What would happen to the German economy? The Germans sell to Britain. They don't buy anything from Britain. You have a massive deficit in England between the European Union and England. England does not sell to Europe. Britain buys from Europe. It's a one-way transaction, and it's a lousy trade deal. It's a bad trade deal, and it's worse than NAFTA, okay? NAFTA was a disaster, and NAFTA was nothing like the disaster called the European Union. And so nothing will happen to Britain. But I can tell you what happens when you stay in the European Union. Ask the Greeks. Ask the Greeks who had 40% unemployment, and now their wages are lower than they were 20 years ago. Italy has a GDP which is lower than it was 15 years ago. Spain has 30% youth unemployment and a 15% official unemployment. Democrats are complaining that Trump is below 4% unemployment and it may rise. He shouldn't be president anymore. 14% unemployment in Spain. That's the official number.
Actually, the real numbers are close to 40%. In Spain, Greg, the real numbers are about 40%. And in the south, in Andalusia, that's the southernmost part of Spain, it's about 70%. So, and if you look at America, you know, Trump is trumpeting 3.5% unemployment rate, but there's 100 million Americans between 16 or 17 and 65 who don't have a job, and 50 million, I believe, are surviving thanks to food stamps. So how do you do that?
Well, here's the thing. So we're not dealing with the issue of unemployment. We're talking about bullshit stuff like there's going to be no Nutella in England after Brexit. That's
Greg, we're out of time. Music is on. I want to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much for your time. I want to have you back on again. GregPalast.com. Greg Palast, an amazing journalist and a good friend. Thank you for being with us.
Daniel, you're the best. Bye.
Take care.
The lover of my soul, Creator God, He is Yahweh. Great I am, He is Yahweh. The Lord of all, He is Yahweh. Joseph Shalom, He is Yahweh. The righteous Son, He is Yahweh. The three in one, He is Yahweh.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Dr. Joe Schneller.
The efficacy that we're looking for, that we're going to prove, is that Carnivora wakes up this immune system and makes...